In the news, there's little hope that Congress will act quickly to extend a federal energy tax credit for building wind turbines, despite the likelihood that letting the program expire will lead to the loss of thousands of jobs. The issue is especially important in Iowa, where an estimated 7,000 workers are employed in more than 250 businesses associated with the wind energy. Columbus, Nebraska-based wind tower manufacturer Katana Summit has blamed uncertainty about tax credit for a loss of business that could force the closure of plants in Columbus and in Washington State. Republican Senator Charles Grassley from Iowa said the full Senate likely won't debate a wind credit bill until after the November election. The House has taken no action on its version. The Cass County Board of Supervisors met Friday morning here in Atlantic to discuss, among other things, how they wish to proceed with plans for the Amazing Energy Urban Renewal Area just north of the Atlantic City limits. Late last month, Kathy Showalter with Planscape Partners made a presentation to the board on behalf of Ron Fagen, CEO of Granite Falls, Minnesota-based Fagen Incorporated, with regard to the possible creation of a 25-million-gallon cellulosic ethanol plant. Showalter asked the board to consider local assistance in the form of a property tax exemption until production begins, 50% property tax exemption and rebate for 10 years after production begins, and assistance with applications for federal and state incentives. Board Chair Dwayne McFadden told KJAN News no decision was made during Friday morning's meeting, but the board did discuss their concerns and other matters related to the property and the next time Showalter might appear before the board.
We wanted to just air out between ourselves about this amazing energy site out here. Kathy Showalter came and did that proposal a couple of weeks ago, and she talked like the 19th when she would be available, and then she would be out of the area for a while. And so we didn't make any decision, but we want to try to maintain going forward if there is someone who would purchase that site to keep the development going on and get the infrastructure built there and create jobs for the best interests of the county at whole.
McFadden says CATCO Executive Director Russell Joyce will try and coordinate a time for Showalter to appear before the board.
We thought, you know, if we can get her back on the agenda, and then we'll have a public hearing and make a motion of a proposal to give to them. We're all, I'd say, pretty much united in to have something go forth out there.
And according to McFadden, Ron Fagen is probably the best qualified to take over that site.
Not everybody can step into that site and use it, and the gentleman, Fagen, is the one that developed that site to the point it is now, and he's probably got the most potential of knowing where you can go from here, maybe use, you know, what infrastructure is there now.
Showalter had said in August that even with an agreement in place, the permitting process would likely take up to a year once investors are secured, and construction on the plant itself would take 18 to 24 months. Atlantic School District Transportation Director Dave Eccles is warning motorists about increased penalties for passing school buses that have their stop arms extended and or the lights flashing. Earlier this year, Governor Terry Branstad signed into law the Keep Aware Driving Youth Need School Safety Act, which is more commonly known as Caden's Law, and that increased the criminal penalties for passing a stopped school bus. Eccles says last month, however, the Iowa Transportation Commission adopted an emergency administrative rule that increases the administrative driving privilege sanctions.
The big change in this law here in the last couple weeks here is they changed the penalty from a possible loss of suspension to a mandatory loss of suspension for 30 days for a minimum for the first offense, and it gets progressively worse from there.
Eccles says drivers basically need to be aware of what they should do when approaching a school bus.
If they're approaching a bus and the lights are flashing, basically they can't pass the bus, you know, and if the stop sign's out, they definitely can't pass it. Depending on which way, if the lights are just flashing, they can meet it and pass it if they don't have time to get stopped before the stop sign comes out. If they're following behind it and the yellow lights are flashing, they can't pass it at all.
He says they've had some instances already this year where drivers have tried to pass Atlantic Community School District buses.
There's been a couple that we've, you know, had to deal with, and the problem is ongoing.
He says drivers simply need to pay attention to the road and not their cell phones or other distracting devices. And he says it's not worth the time you think you're saving trying to get to work or school by passing a stopped school bus, especially in terms of a child's life.
Well, no. You know, if some child gets hurt or killed, you know, it's going to be a tragedy for the whole community, and I guess we don't want to see that. And there's just, you know, distracted driving is a big problem anymore.
According to a recently released school bus drivers survey sponsored by the National Association of State Directors of Public Transportation, there's been a marked increase in the number of motorists who blow past the school bus arm and flashing red lights. The number of vehicles illegally passing a school bus during a one-day count conducted earlier this year was 43.7%. That's compared with 38.2% in 2011. Officials with U.S. Cellular have announced voting has started in the company-sponsored Calling All Communities campaign to improve education. Returning for its fourth year, the cellular phone provider will give communities the opportunity to help improve the education of students at 18 schools by challenging them to rally community support for a chance to win a share of $1 million. The school that garners the most community votes wins $150,000, while the next 17 schools with the most votes receive $50,000. You can visit your local U.S. Cellular store to pick up a code to vote for your favorite school. Calling All Communities is open to all K-12 schools, big or small, public or private. Voting concludes on October 21st. And again, to vote, you simply need to visit a local U.S. Cellular store to pick up a voting code and enter it online at uscellular.com. You can check back to track your school ranking, see the top vote-getting schools, get ideas to rally more votes, and post photos. With only one vote per person, it is important to get entire communities involved. Since the program began in 2008, U.S. Cellular has awarded $3 million to 38 schools across the country for them to use however they see fit to impact the education of students. Past Calling All Communities champions have used their winnings in a variety of ways to strengthen the learning experience for thousands of students. Many winning schools outfitted their classrooms with new computers, improved outdated infrastructure, and renovated gymnasiums, kitchens, and science labs, as well as provided scholarships to graduating students. Among the school districts receiving awarded funds through the program over the past few years is the Carroll Kemper Catholic High School, which won $100,000 in 2009. Getting off to a strong start in the voting has proven successful for schools in past campaigns. Previous winners got out of the gate early and rallied their community together in fun and innovative ways. Using social networking sites like Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter will help to spread the word online. But don't forget to engage parent-teacher organizations, alumni networks, sports teams, the high school band, or student groups to get the word out. The official rules for the campaign are located at uscellular.com/calling all communities. Taking a look at world headlines at this hour on KJAN, the hunt for who might have been responsible for the deadly attack on the U.S. consulate in Libya is getting some help as the U.S. dispatches spies and drones. But even as more resources are devoted to the effort, U.S. officials say no evidence has been found so far, pointing conclusively to a particular group or to indicate Tuesday's attack was planned. The U.S. consulate in Sydney, Australia, is the latest target of global demonstrations against an anti-Muslim film produced in the U.S. Riot police clashed with about 200 protesters today. 10 network television news shows showed a policeman knocked unconscious and reported several people were injured. Tens of thousands of people have marched across downtown Moscow in the first major protest in 3 months against President Vladimir Putin. Leftists, liberals, nationalists, gay activists, and others turned out today in defiance of Kremlin efforts to muzzle dissent. The crowds chanted, "Russia without Putin," and "We are the government." Officials from both camps say world events could force changes, but the presidential candidates have aggressive campaign schedules coming up. Mitt Romney is looking to refocus attention on the economy after events in Libya and to broaden his appeal among women and Hispanics. He and President Barack Obama will participate in a Florida forum this week hosted by the influential Hispanic television outlet Univision. And both sides say marathon talks have produced a framework that could lead to an end of the week-long Chicago teachers' strike. They indicated that if all goes well, 350 students could be back in the classrooms as soon as Monday. But both sides caution it's not a final deal until the deal's details are worked out. The teachers plan to partake in a rally today. And taking a look at our funeral announcements here on KJAN, 96-year-old Gerald Herrick of Greenfield died Sunday at the Greenfield Manor. Funeral services for Gerald Herrick will be held today at 10 o'clock at the Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield. Donna Jean Brandis, age 82 of Corydon and formerly of Oakland, died Tuesday. Funeral services for Donna Brandis will be today at 10:30 at the Oakland Christian Church. Regan Veith Funeral Home in Oakland is in charge of the arrangements. Vern M. Richards, age 94 of Bridgewater, died Tuesday at the Greenfield Manor. A Masonic funeral ceremony for Vern Richards will be followed by a memorial service beginning today at 11 a.m. at the Carl United Methodist Church. The Iowa Cremation Society is assisting the family with arrangements. Patricia Patty Olson, age 61, of Joppa, Maryland, died September 7th. Graveside services for Patricia Olson will be held today at 1:30 at the Cuppies Grove Cemetery in rural Shelby County. Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Darlene Hansen, age 84, who's formerly of Elkhorn, died August 13th at Mercy Hospice in Des Moines. A memorial service for Darlene Hansen will be today at 2 o'clock at the Westminster Presbyterian Church in the Des Moines suburb of Beaverdale. McLaren Rest Haven Chapel and Mortuary in West Des Moines has the arrangements. Glenn D. Clemson, age 83, of Exira, died Thursday at the Exira Care Center. Funeral services for Glenn Clemson will be on Monday at 10:30 at the Elkhorn Lutheran Church. Kessler Funeral Home in Exira has arrangements. Marlene Hare, age 76, of Atlantic, died Friday at the Heritage House in Atlantic. Graveside services for Marlene Hare will be held on Wednesday at 10 o'clock at the Anita Evergreen Cemetery in Anita. Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic is in charge of the arrangements. And that is a check of our news and funeral announcements here on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen.